Batter Up.
Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 103 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Cerevich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the past week of Mets has been pretty bad on the field. We won't waste that much time talking about it, but if we keep going with our now months-long, I feel like, toast analogy, the Mets briefly came out of the toaster, but then they were already toasted sufficiently and someone put them back in the toaster and then they became overly toasted. So it's
they're
like twice
burnt
toasted
at this point.
Toast.
Just plain burnt.
Yeah. Just burnt toast.
Smoldering, like the whole house smells. You have to open a window.
Yeah.
It's like, the kind where like as a mom, you can't even pretend that somebody might eat it. You're just like, no, we're starting over.
Yeah. Like somebody took the toast out of the toaster and decided it wasn't toasty enough and put it back and then accidentally burned the whole thing down.
Or they forgot about it. They set it up on the high setting, walked away, did other things and came back and was like, oh, I almost burned the house down.
Who among us?
Because, you know, it was like the very last dead cat bounce. They did that very exciting, like, 2 out of 3 from the Yankees in the Subway Series. And the games were very exciting. The weekend games were. And then, like, they came out of it and it looked like, I mean, it didn't necessarily look like they were going to make a run because they were already kind of far behind at that point. But the race started to shape up such that the division kind of became out of reach because the Braves were not falling. And so, but actually the wild card started to become like a slight possibility, except they were chasing a bunch of teams, but they weren't that many games out. So it started to become like, oh, maybe if all these teams lose and the Mets win, they can do the wild card. And the schedule presented the Mets once again on a silver platter. The Mets were presented with an opportunity where in over the course of a week, they played 2 of the teams that they are chasing in the wild card standings in the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies. And they were swept by the Cardinals and lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. So that just goes to show, it kind of shows that like the series against the Yankees was fake and this is not a playoff team. Like
it was a nice clear answer. There was no, it was like, what does a playoff team even look like? Oh, kind of that. I mean, that's the other thing is the Cardinals and Phillies aren't that good either, which
no, they
really, really puts the microscope over how bad the Mets are.
Right.
But I mean, they were just playing a different class of baseball and the Mets is not the kind that is going to be played for too much longer this season.
And the Mets were shut out by Adam Wainwright, as if I needed 2006 flashbacks added to my charcuterie, as they say in the MLB TV commercial, charcuterie board. Did you just say charcuterie? Charcuterie board of Mets this year. I can just add that little tidbit, that little cured meat of Mets, 2006 PTSD.
I forget, it was a Vaz, maybe. I can't remember who pointed it out, but they're like, how awful is it that Adam Wainwright is still pitching and shutting down the Mets and David Wright physically can't play anymore? Like, that just added salt to the wound, too.
Oh, yeah, I get angry every time. And meanwhile, like, Yadier Molina is...
Yeah, him too.
...is literally, like, immortal somehow.
Bouncing around on the knees of a man half his age.
Yeah.
Fine.
Like,
it's
he's
fine.
He's a catcher, and he's still fine. Like, I'm just like, what?
Like, I will say, though, as long as we're talking about petty grudges, it was nice that if the Mets were going to pretend they knew how to play baseball, that they did do it against the Phillies. Not the Phillies. Not the other
Yankees.
Ones. The Yankees. Thank you. That's the
one.
Well,
they did for one day against the Phillies.
Yeah, they did pretend. I mean, like, the last game of the Phillies series was, I mean, they won. It was, but like it didn't matter at that point because they had already lost whatever it was, like 5 games in a row at that point.
Yeah.
Well. And but it was one thing I'll say about it is that it was a bright spot for Jeff McNeil, who hit the go-ahead homer that ultimately won the game. And it, like, lately he has been looking a little more like himself, and that's good if he can, like, you know, end the season on a positive note. That would be nice for him. I think it's been a, you know, it's been a struggle for him, and he has not made secret how frustrated he's been by it.
Wait, should we play a game of who should return and who shouldn't? Like, out of the spare parts, McNeil, Dom, JD.
We can play that game. I mean,
we can play that game.
I don't know. Like, all people. So I had a conversation with someone on Twitter recently about this, because, and this wasn't, you know, a person who was yelling at me. This is a person who, he and I were having a legit back and forth about it. And he was like, they need to, you know, trade everybody and tear it down, basically, because I don't see a path to them being good next season. And I was like, I agree that I don't really see a path, but they're not in a good position right now in any fashion, because I don't think that Mets fans are going to like the returns that they're going to get on these trades. Like, you want to trade Jeff McNeil and Dominic Smith? Sure, you can do that, but you're not going to get the return that you would like from those players at this time. I hate to break it to you. You're not going to rebuild your farm system by trading Jeff McNeil and Dominic Smith and selling at their absolute lowest points.
I mean, it was an understandable, I think part of what was really disappointing about the season was, like, they entered with perfectly reasonable, good expectations for all of these guys, and just none of them delivered, like, straight up zero. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them are busts and all of them are useless players to have on the team, but they do have to sort of make themselves a little wager as to who is and who isn't, and try to keep around the guys that are going to be good. Cause I mean, they can't trade all of them, because they literally need people to play those positions, and they're not going to go out in this offseason and replace what, like, two outfielders, a third baseman, a second baseman, like, plus basically every pitcher.
When it comes to Jeff McNeil, his season's interesting to me, because he is both the player that I'm most surprised by, like, his downturn, but also, like, most encouraged that it won't happen again of the guys that have been, like, really, really underwhelming. And that's because his batted ball profile has been pretty much, like, identical to his career averages. And it just seems that he, like, it's like an approach thing, or that he's constantly hitting into hard outs right at people. They've learned how to shift him properly, whereas they didn't before. And, like, he was always a guy who could, like, he demonstrated it, that he could sell out a little bit of batting average to get a little bit more power if he wanted to do that. But this year he kind of did neither, like, of those things, you know?
And he was always kind of an all fields guy. So I don't know why the shift should have killed him.
But it has been. It has been. And, like, that's what the underlying stats are bearing out, that the shift is killing him.
But in the past, he wasn't that guy.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. But he's, like, at least he's not, like, I don't know. Like, James McCann, I have, like, no hope that he will be any good again. Like, he's just,
good for, like, 20 minutes 2 years ago. So,
right.
Again, feels, like, a little generous.
McNeil has a body of work, and the underlying, you know, metrics show that he's in line with what he's done before, and maybe a little luck plus a little bit of a change in approach will fix it. I don't think that, like, he's suddenly not a good baseball player anymore, whereas I don't think that James McCann's a very good hitter. I won't say not a good baseball player, because he's been fine as a receiver for the most part. Not great, not, like, you know, like a super defensive great catcher, but, like, you know, not Wilson Ramos. So, you know, but
that's a low bar.
he's not a good hitter, and I don't think he's gonna be a good hitter moving forward. But what are they gonna do? Like, cut him?
I don't think there's any, like, well, the only noteworthy catcher really out there is Real Muto, and that's long gone. So I don't even know what you do at this point. Although it was nice, I think we said this last week, seeing Gary Sanchez behind the plate, it made me appreciate James McCann a little bit more.
Catching is hard.
It's not easy.
I mean, but the frustrating thing about the Mets is that they had the opportunity to sign the best catcher on the market 2 years in a row and chose not to do that two times in a row. They, instead of Yasmani Grandal, they signed Wilson Ramos. And instead of JT Realmuto, they signed James McCann. And neither of those were the right decision.
And they gave up on Darnell too.
Yep. And they did. Yep, that they did. And as far as like other players, like, I mean, with Dominic Smith, I think it's highly dependent on if there's a DH next year or not. And that also like affects the Robinson Cano picture as well. Whether the Mets can hold on to all these players or just kind of trade them for what they can get or cut them. Like, I honestly don't know where Dominic Smith's place is on this team moving forward if there's no DH especially. I don't know.
Is JD going to be on the team?
They keep saying that Robinson Cano is working out at third base, which is like, oh, Jesus Christ.
That seems like a terrible idea in so many different ways, unless your end goal in all this is to get him so injured that you could just stick him on the 60-day for the foreseeable future. If he doesn't
get injured, he's on so many drugs again that he'll probably get caught.
I mean, you should just generally assume that Robinson Cano is on drugs.
Yeah.
That seems like a safe bet.
And like Robinson Cano, like we've talked about in this podcast before, presents a salary problem for the Mets as far as their payroll. Because when you think about like how it has ripple effects now, again, I am not one to excuse ownership ever. Like, I think the Mets should simply spend above the luxury tax to build a better baseball team and not let Robinson Cano's salary be a hindrance to them. But if they do that, there are other things that then become a problem, such as Edwin Diaz's arbitration salary. Like, at what point do you, because Edwin Diaz is going to get a raise. I know that people don't like to hear that. I know that people don't like that Edwin Diaz is going to get a raise because they think he's like the worst or whatever. I think he's okay. He's not the elite closer they paid for, or they traded for, I should say. He's not the elite closer they traded for, but he's not awful. He's not the worst, like many of the fans think. He's fine, but he's gonna get a raise in arbitration because he has 30 saves. Like, I'm sorry, that's the way it works.
And because it's almost impossible to not.
Yeah, and so he's gonna get a hefty arbitration number, and I don't know, like, how the Mets feel about, given their payroll situation, giving him that amount of money to be a mediocre closer, or, you know, or if they want to go out and get a closer and that's fine, then Edwin Diaz becomes a very expensive like setup man then, which I would also be in favor of doing.
But yeah, I think that would be fine. But then you also have Loop, you have Syndergaard, you have Stroman.
Loop, who they should re-sign, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you.
But especially because he wants to be here, crazy person.
Anytime a player who's good inexplicably wants to be a part of this circus, like, please pay attention and actually sign that player.
Yeah, like, Loop reminds, I mean, like, I get they're totally different pitchers, but he kind of reminds me of Addison Reed, where, like, he just came in so unheralded and just became the best reliever they had without like any fanfare, and just went out there, did his job, and went home. Like, drank a Busch Light in the process, and that was it.
Busch Light.
One Busch Light.
A single Busch Light.
It's Friday night. You know what time it is. Time to have approximately one Busch Light and call 911. But yeah, I mean, you got to bring him back, especially considering he won't garner that much.
Baez, you have to make a decision on.
Stroman.
I mean, Stroman should not be a decision.
No.
Like, it shouldn't be.
I mean, it probably will be.
Loop and Stroman should not be decisions.
But Stroman has been the absolute rock of this team. You know, he's no Jacob DeGrom, but literally no one is. And he has done everything south of Jacob DeGrom that anyone could ever ask of him.
Yeah, he's been the Mets' most consistent starting pitcher this year.
Yeah.
By 100%. A mile. And yeah, so he should be there should be no question around Stroman, because if they need to try to replace his innings from the outside, they're not going to be able to, or let me put it this way. They could do it if they invested, but at that point they might as well just bring back Stoneman, and they're probably not going to do either. So there we go.
Yep. Yeah. So I feel that the Mets are in a tricky situation because in order to build a contending roster, it's going to cost more money than I think that they are willing to spend. Now, obviously we don't have a big enough sample size on Steve Cohen to know what he's going to do, but like, it's going to be they'd have to bump up the payroll by a lot in order to get this to contention. And they can't afford to fix a lot of their problems in trade because they don't have any pieces to trade. Like I mentioned, the existing big league players who you might want to offload from the team are not going to bring you back and trade what you want, and they don't have a farm system to trade from at this point. So they're just not in a good position right now. They're where the Mets have always been, in like a middling, mediocre, middle purgatory ground where they're not outright tanking. They're not 100 game losers. They're not trying to suck on purpose, but like they're not perennial winners either. And there's not a path forward to try to rebuild or to try to be Dodgers East right now. It's frustrating. I don't know what they do.
Because the division's not great. They could totally be feasting on this division if, I guess, if things had broke differently this year. Like, there's a scenario where they were great this year.
They were in first place for 90 days.
Yeah, where DeGrom stayed healthy and like two of the six guys who sucked all year sucked less.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it looks like a very different team, but that didn't happen. And I don't know how, you know, I feel like there's a path forward if some people bounce back, but you have to guess which people, and the Mets have never been very good at that. like not ever.
No.
And yeah, no. So I guess it just feels like a lot more of the same.
Yeah.
I mean, and at least they have the capacity to buy their way out of it. Now, we don't know if they will or not, but at least there's a scenario that exists that they can do that.
Yeah.
Whereas if a couple years ago, that would just be an absolute like non-starter. So that's the only positive I can think of right now. But it still remains to be seen if that's the path they choose to go down.
And it's funny because a lot of people, ourselves included, on this podcast talked about how they didn't do enough at the trading deadline to improve the team. And that's sort of been borne out in the sense that they, you know, scuffled in the second half and fell out of contention. But the trade deadline acquisitions have actually been some of the better trade deadline acquisitions across baseball. And they have done everything that the Mets could have possibly asked of them. Javi Baez has been raking since he's been a Met. And Rich Hill has done exactly what you ask of him every fifth day. He pitches five innings and gives up three runs, Rich Hill style, which is exactly what you would expect. And Trevor Williams has been arguably better than they could have expected. So
is he under contract for another year or no? Oh, he is. Okay.
Does he have options?
I think he did. That's why they traded for him instead of somebody else.
But they probably burned one. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, they traded for him because he had options. I mean, I don't remember if he has like another one next year or not. But
that feels like a question for a different podcast.
Yeah, yes. I will look that up at another point. I'm sorry that I'm not armed with that information.
No, I meant like a different podcast altogether.
Oh, yes. Like, that is enough.
Like, not to say that we can't ever answer those questions, but if you really want that question answered, and I realize I'm the one who asked it, we can recommend any number of other podcasts.
Speaking of like question marks for next year, as far as injury updates are concerned, Brandon Nimmo's back, so that's good. I mean, he had a rather short stint on the IL this time. And he's back to doing Brandon Nimmo things mostly. Syndergaard and DeGrom are both they both seem to think that they are coming back, or the Mets seem to think both of them are coming back at some point. Syndergaard is closer. He's nearing a return. Like, they said that he's going to make a couple of rehab appearances in AAA, and so he's like ready to make a rehab start, and he's gonna make a couple of those, and then he's gonna come back at like what, the last week of the season, I guess, sure, whatever. And maybe DeGrom too, I have no idea. It doesn't much matter, they're playing out the string at this point. Like I said last week with Syndergaard, I sort of get it, because you have to see if he's like capable of throwing a baseball before you make a decision about a qualifying offer. For DeGrom, it's like probably purely aesthetic, just for him to say like, I came back. But yeah, that's where we're at. It seems like with Michael Conforto and the qualifying offer, the rumor is that the Mets are likely to offer Michael Conforto the qualifying offer, and that he is likely to reject. It seems like that is the rumor that is out there. Now, I mean, obviously Conforto himself was asked about it and was non-committal on the matter, but you know, the inside sources to the various Scoops guys say that he is likely to reject. But I don't think they know that for certain. That's just a rumor.
I think if he does, I think his then he's playing his last days as a Met.
I agree. I don't think he's coming back. Yeah. Which is
well,
sad.
And I think, you know, I think there is, I think the logic behind rejecting the offer is pretty sound. And this is another thing where I think people are going to say like, oh, that's, you know, he's been terrible, he's never going to get that much. And the thing is like, he probably will be able to get that much, maybe not per year, but you know, if he can get, you know, double the amount of the qualifying offer over 3 years, which I think would probably still be a bit of an underpay given his pedigree, then like, I think he would take that. I think that would be a smart thing to take. So I get it, but it's going to make a lot of people mad.
Yeah. But then that also means the Mets have to figure out what to do with their outfield next year.
What outfield?
Yeah, that's very true. Brandon Nimmo and Kevin Pillar, folks.
Is Pillar under contract next year?
I think so.
Asking this question.
I'm pretty sure he is.
He has an option. It's like a weird option. I can't remember. He has like a weird option.
Isn't it a player option? Yeah.
That well. Who even knows it? Like, it's just.
I mean, yeah. You could. I mean, if you want Cano to be your third baseman, you could always stick Bryant in left field. Bryant has played the outfield.
I guess here's the thing is, you know, Allison said it earlier that like, we don't really know who Steve Cohen is.
No.
But we're going to find out. Like, that's why I feel like it's so hard for us to sit here and answer these questions and like map out the path, because we just don't know what his deal is.
Yeah, this is probably going to be one of their, I mean, we say this every year. But this is going to be a crucial offseason in a lot of ways, not only because of how many question marks they have on the team, but because this is their shot at getting it right in the front office and, you know, maybe even manager, which probably is what's going to happen. Like, they inherited a lot of dudes, and then I'm sure they had a process or whatever. Sandy Alderson said they had a process. But with Cohen not being hired until November, there was a time, or being approved in November, you still had a time crunch. The offseason was already underway at that point. So at least this time, and I'm sure they already are preparing. We know the Mets are not making the playoffs. So at least you have a full off season now to prepare. You've had, you know, months to prepare now, knowing, you know, that this team's got some holes that you're going to have to fix for next year. So, but they have to get it right. You have to, how many times have, like we said, they should have gone after Realmuto. They should have gone after Wheeler. They should have done this. Like, stop giving us the should-haves. Give us something more concrete now.
And now the excuses have to go too, because like, this is not the the season immediately post COVID where everything was super weird and we didn't have good samples on the guys the year before. This is not like you have to put together a front office in like 45 minutes on the back of a napkin because Jeff Wilpon took forever to decide to sell. Like, it's that kind of nonsense is done. And Steve Cohen has a, for better or worse, very blank slate to work from. And so here's the moment, like, okay, what do you got? Let's see it.
Yeah. Show us what you can do now. Like, this is all you now. Like, you can't say you inherited everything, anything. You can't say you inherited these problems. This is all yours now. So like we said with the minor leaguers too, like, you should have known they weren't being paid. You can't claim you didn't know. Like, you're the boss. You should know what's going on in your organization. So, you know,
treat the Mets you would your standard white collar crime, Steve. pretend the NL East is the FCC. Or no, wait, SEC, whatever it is.
Yeah. Whatever the watchdog is.
The ones that you always want to throw stuff in the shredder when they come by. Those guys.
Yeah.
How do you outsmart the rest of the SEC?
The NL East should not be hard to outsmart. Let's be real.
Especially the Phillies and the Marlins. And I don't see the Nationals being good at all.
Oh, the Nationals aren't going to be good like 5 years. They're going to be bad.
So you have the Nationals and the Marlins. So you already have your odds of winning the National League East have already gone up because you have two teams that are just legitimately not competing next year. So you have a 1-3 shot at winning next year.
And the Braves are always like underreacting to everything. They're never refreshing their roster. They keep winning by default because every other team is a dumpster fire. And that makes me so mad. If the stupid Braves are going to win anything, make them deserve it with Chipper Jones or something. None of these little half-ass folks that they've been bringing.
Yeah, they're getting bounced in the first round. Let's be real. Just like last year when they gave up 11 runs in the first inning, it's like, how embarrassing.
Oh, yeah, to the Cardinals,
couldn't even be
right?
competitive. Like, this is the National League East, and we couldn't do better than that.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Nope.
People often ask me if prosecuting the mob is like the movies. Well, there is violence.
He cracks his guys over the head, and it popped just like a melon popped.
There are hits.
So it wasn't just permission to take him out, but permission to take out his own nephew.
But after taking down over 100 mobsters, I can tell you this. The real thing is much more interesting. I'm Ellie Honig, former mob prosecutor and host of the new podcast, Up Against the Mob. Up Against the Mob lifts the veil on the world's most secretive criminal organization, La Cosa Nostra. We'll talk to prosecutors, former mobsters, and undercover agents. And unlike Hollywood, all these stories are true. New episodes drop every Wednesday starting September 8th. Listen and follow Up Against the Mob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.
Hey, are you hungry for a hot take on your latest favorite film?
I like Dwayne Johnson, and I personally think he is the greatest action star of his time.
Or a wild and weird take on a cult classic, because Idiocracy was so good it ruined all future political comedy.
Or a take so fanatical it blows your mind all the way to the next stratosphere.
Vin Diesel's character, Dominic Toretto, is a f***ing angel, man.
Then check out Galaxy Brains, a podcast where movies, TV, and overthinking collide. Hosted by me, Dave Schilling.
And me, Jonah Ray. Each week on the show, we blow our own minds and yours with a galactic level take on the zeitgeistiest movie or TV show of the moment.
Then we run those takes by our favorite comedians and expert pals who either lift us up or shut us down.
Tune in and follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
Anyway, as far as like it being all Steve Cohen now, rumors are starting to heat up on who the Mets will seek out as president of baseball operations to work under team president Sandy Alderson next season. And it seems that Billy Bean is their top choice, AKA like the rumors make it seem like it's his job to take or turn down. Like basically he's the top dog. It's his job if he wants it. And there has been rumors as well that if Bean comes over, it might be Bob Melvin in a package deal. Like both of them would come over. But you know, Theo Epstein and David Stearns have also been mentioned by John Heyman as being on the quote short list. And now you can recall when we got the question, when we did our Q&A about like, what executives would you like to see the Mets replace, you know, Sandy Alderson? Well, no one's replacing Sandy Alderson, but what executives would you like to see them bring in? I mentioned David Stearns in that conversation. So it's good that the Mets are at least thinking about him, but I don't think that he's, you know, he's the one who's gotten the least mentions of the three names. Like he's just been mentioned as being on the short list, but I think they didn't give permission last time to interview, although I'm trying to remember what the dynamic was last time and if Sandy Alderson was like if this was for president of baseball operations or just as a GM. I don't remember. I always forget like what titles they're trying to give people. Like when you organize the front office and give like the president of baseball operations title, it's usually to like pry these big names away so that they're not just the GM, they're president of baseball operations. It's like, you know, a fake title that gets them more money and like enables them to like pry them away from their other teams.
It's like executive producer.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
That's exactly it.
So, well, also, you know,
like, the regulars are the ones dropping the hints, like Martino said today, like, oh, Bean might be intrigued of going back to the team that, you know, that drafted him. Like, the hints are there.
Yeah. And like, as we've mentioned on the podcast before, when people were talking about Theo Epstein, like, it's not a coincidence that two of these three candidates on this short list are Sandy Alderson's mentor and Jared Porter's mentor. Like, I'm not, you know, like, Billy Bean is, I mean, other than being the Moneyball guy, which is how everyone knows him, like, I don't necessarily have any, like, thing against him. Like, there's no, like, known reasons for him to not be a good idea. We don't necessarily, the thing with Bean is that he's somewhat of an unknown quantity on how he will operate with a big market team. Because he's like known as being the Moneyball guy because he was running the A's and they were a very small market team and he had to like, you know, do Moneyball to make every dollar count. Now we don't know if like if Steve Cohen gives him like a budget or like a bigger budget and says like go out and spend, like how he will do that. But it's still the fact that he's like the top one of the top, if not the top choice, is not exactly indicative of any sort of sea change on the part of the Mets at all. Like they're bringing the Moneyball guy who mentored Sandy Alderson.
Yeah, because it just seems like the good old boys club. Like, oh, this is my buddy. Let's hire him. Like, I mean, he's obviously qualified, but I would just like somebody for once not tied to Sandy Alderson.
I mean, it's just Moneyball all the way down at this point. Like, you know, people talk about wanting to like do something super different and, you know, go with like, you know, someone from the Rays, but like the Rays are kind of the ultimate Moneyball team right now. Like that's just how they all are, which is depressing. But like, you know, if you want a baseball guy, he's probably going to be Moneyball. He's probably going to hang out a lot with Sandy Alderson, you know, hopefully not Zach Scott. But like, you know, I feel like the options are so limited. It's like that photo of from the that went viral at the stadium with like all of the white guys that look exactly the same, like all down the, it's like, that's baseball. It's all these guys who are almost impossible to tell apart from each other.
Yeah. Just all bland, boring white dudes. Yep.
And they're all friends with Sandy Alderson.
Yes.
that's how he works.
Yeah, like I just like One of my favorite baseball tweets of all time is from Craig Goldstein of Baseball Prospectus, and it's the tweet that he did that was like, Billy Bean does 19 things to make his team slightly cheaper and slightly worse. Yes, I see it. Nats sign Scherzer makes no sense. Like, that's what Billy Bean is, and like, forgive me if I'm not like hyped out of my mind about that. Like, yes, is he a respected, as was Sandy Alderson at the time, is he a respected baseball executive who like most people consider to be a really smart guy who knows the game? Absolutely, yes. But like, I don't know, like, I don't necessarily care that he's gonna be like smart and find the best bargain bin reliever. Like, that's not what excites me. Like, the Francisco Lindor extension excited me as a fan, you know?
Give me the stars. Don't get me like Scott Hatterberg.
Right.
Like, we're New York. We're not Oakland. Like,
I mean, to be fair, that Oakland team, they just forgot to put it in the movie, had a lot of stars.
That's true.
That just wasn't so exciting. Like, it should be all of the right off-screen Oakland A's. Yeah. And less of the on-screen Oakland A's. But Bean is all.
Wait, was Giambi on that team? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was. Yes,
he was.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Billy Bean's another guy who, despite having been in the league for so long, is kind of an unknown in some ways because he's just been with the A's for so long. Like, it's not that he himself is a complete unknown, but what he would look like out, you know, on a different team that I don't think we have a real clear picture of.
He's also like not currently, or like, I don't know. I just feel like he's like kind of removed from like a lot of the modern things
because he wanted to leave baseball a couple years ago.
Yeah,
so I don't know, like, does he not like where the game is going? Like, what was his reasoning for wanting to leave baseball? Like, that to me is a red flag.
Yeah, I don't know, we'll see. I mean, like, if that ends up being the choice, you know, I guess pending, you know, us finding out anything that we don't know right now about Billy Bean, they could do worse, that's for sure. But I guess we'll see. We don't know how Billy Bean will operate as a big market manager, just like we don't know how Steve Cohen exactly will operate in his first full offseason as owner. So it'll be interesting to see it all play out. So,
and we'll be here talking about it. So lucky y'all.
That's going to be our whole off season.
I know.
Oh, it could be. I mean,
all this stuff again.
I said this the other day, I tweeted it, that the Mets are either bad or interesting. Like, there's no between. So that's going to be the off season. Like, at least we'll have things to talk about because stuff should happen. So either whether the stuff they do is good or bad, it'll at least be interesting.
It will at least be interesting.
May you live in interesting times.
So unprecedented times.
Oh, I never want to hear that again.
I know.
Nope.
So something that happened in baseball. So speaking of teams that have kind of like tanked themselves out of contention in the second half, the San Diego Padres have had a pretty spectacular fall from grace.
I was going to say, why is there no LOL Padres? Why is it only LOL Mets?
I mean, lately it's been pretty LOL Padres as far as like they've started to fire people. Like, they fired their is it like minor league development or scouting director?
Yeah, and he was there for like years,
and they fired him just like kind of out of nowhere, which is like a really weird fall guy for this. And so I don't know what's going on there. I mean, like, I don't know enough about the Padres and like what's been happening to know what might be going on there, other than like, I know that they have, you know, the Padres have a very good farm system, one of the best in the league, which is a testament to their player development, but also they've struggled to, other than Fernando Tatis Jr., obviously, they've struggled to, like, you know, have these guys like become good players once they're big leaguers. Like, a lot of their like big minor league guys have not panned out like they hoped. So I think that like maybe he's taking the fall for that, but it seems like there might be something bigger going on. I don't know, man. But Anyway, something that, again, like, we say it's always LOL Mets. If this had happened, I mean, we know if something similar had happened, it would have been a big circus, because something similar kind of did happen with the rat raccoon thing, and it was a big circus. But there was a confrontation in the Padres dugout at a recent game between Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. And that's the other reason why it was like a big deal that blew up a lot, was because it was these two star players on the Padres. And, you know, you could see, so Tatis like reacted to a strikeout, like, you know, he reacted negatively to it. And like, I think Machado kind of got in his face in the dugout and yelled like, "It's not fucking about you." So that was interesting. And I've seen a lot of split reactions on this. Like, I've seen people, like some people say that like it was really toxic and Machado getting his face in public was like really not good. And Machado, as we all know, is known for, you know, being a bit of a hothead at times, throughout his career. But I've seen other people say that like it was a good demonstration of like leadership, you know, like guiding the younger player, and stuff like that, and trying to make him understand that like everybody knows you're good, like you don't have to do this. So it was it was interesting. I'm not sure which side of that I land on.
Well, it reminded me of, was
the memes were wonderful though,
by yeah, the way. The memes were top notch. Like, I could watch the memes all day. But what it reminded me of was the Wilmer Flores walk-off game against the Nationals, because Bryce Harper got thrown out of that game. And I remember Ronnie saying, "You absolutely cannot do that in a game like this. In a game you're playing your division rival, you're the team's best player, and you let your team down. And look what happened. The Nationals lost the game with their best player sitting in the clubhouse." So Manny Machado was absolutely right. But I don't know if it's something you should do in full view of the cameras, because then this is what it turns into. It turns into a media circus.
Well, and of course, remember what happened, I think, just a couple weeks after Bryce Harper got thrown out. He also then got like manhandled by Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah,
because I think that's the common thread here, which is that frustrated players on bad teams behave badly, and overreact, and everybody is on edge. And I think, you know, would it be like the giant circus it is if it was a different, or would it be a bigger circus if it was a bigger market? Maybe, probably, you know, would there be a LOL Mets long-term narrative to work with? Absolutely. But I think you just see this nonsense everywhere. And it's, and that, I mean, then that's just, I mean, when I say everywhere, I don't even just mean like other baseball teams. That's just like what people do when everything is going wrong, is they behave like big babies and like beat up their teammates in the dugout, or, you know, get thrown out of games.
I mean, yeah, we even saw it with the Mets. I mean, but they did it in the tunnel when they saw a raccoon. But, you know, tempers, like you said, Maggie, tempers flare. And when the teams are struggling, you're already on edge. So you just need that one thing to kind of set you off. And I mean, I think Tatis and Machado are fine. I don't think they hate each other, or, you know, this is going to be a problem going forward. But it's just something that happens, and it's just going to keep happening, because it's just, you know, the adrenaline's going. You're under a lot of pressure. There's a lot of eyes on you, and you're expected to do well. And, you know, that one thing could just, like you said, just set them off, and that's it. And then now you're always going to be known as like the problem, or, because you're not going to live this down. The memes are forever now.
The memes are forever. And I found it to be an interesting dynamic with Manny Machado in particular, because he is a player that's known for having acted immaturely in the past when he was on the Orioles. And he got a lot of crap for that from the media and also from like veteran players on his team, from Adam Jones, from JJ Hardy, from other veteran players for his behavior. And I think like it's unclear to me whether this is a reflection of him learning from that and not wanting Tatis to act the same way that he acted when he was his age, or like if it's a, you know, if it on one side it could be that, and on the other side it seems like hypocritical to people on the outside, I think, for him to act that way and like you know, react that way to someone being immature. It's like, well, you were one of the more immature players in the league at one point, so I don't know. It's like, is it a change on his part, or is,
or would
it,
he be, well, the only one who could get through to Tatis,
or could anybody, like, yeah, how, like, if, you know, someone like Adam Jones can't get through to baby Manny Machado, then it's going to be hard for anyone to get through to Fernando Tatis Jr. Because again, these are guys with big egos and, you know, a lot of them tend towards being very defensive. And that's, you know, the interpersonal dynamics are just complicated, but also when you think about it, like, really typical in a lot of ways. Yeah. If you just expect them to act like regular people, it kind of makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, well, Tatis, right, is 22 years old. Like, he was basically a college kid.
You know,
he was like
a baby.
I was gonna say, you know, like, if this happened at a college game, you'd be like, oh, okay, college boys, yeah, whatever. Like,
literal babies.
Yeah, they're babies. So, I mean, stuff happens. I don't think it's that big of a deal because, yeah, tempers are going to flare, especially on struggling teams. And I know people were saying that, like, Tingler has lost the clubhouse and that proved it. And I think that was Matt Williams definitely did back with the Papelbon-Harper incident. But I didn't see this as a fight. This was more of like just calling out your teammates. So I don't,
yeah,
from that aspect, I don't know. I mean, I also don't know the Padres, and because they're on the West Coast, I don't really follow them. So I can't speak on if Tinkler's lost the clubhouse, but I don't know if that means, you know, the whole clubhouse is all of a sudden gone kaput because of one incident.
Yeah, I don't think that that's true, but I also find the whole, like, I haven't lost the clubhouse t-shirt has people asking a lot of questions about my shirt.
I haven't lost the clubhouse, but if you see it, could you let me know?
I've been looking for it.
Yeah. Actually, it's really funny. Like, literally as we're talking, The Athletic posted a new article where Machado and Tatis, like, addressed the confrontation to the media, and it definitely reads like it, the quotes that they gave, I mean, obviously, you know, the quotes that they gave could just be like lies to placate people, but the way it reads is very much akin, like, in line with what Linda was saying, because Machado said, we've got Fernando over here. That's about to win the MVP. And we've got a team that's trying to compete and get to the World Series. We haven't been playing some great baseball, so emotions get involved and get the better of us at times. And those are situations that we learn as leaders, as a team, as an organization, that we have to get better from that, said Machado, who called Tatis my little brother. He added, we've got a lot of years here moving forward. So he knows that, like, they're both the leaders on the team moving forward. Like, they're the faces of that team, and that they've got to, like, work on that. And I don't think it's a fight, like, they hate each other. I think it's just, you know, moment got the better of them.
And also, on the flip side, let's not forget, when there was the gunshots at Nationals Park, it was Tatis and Machado who ran onto the field to let fans into the clubhouse.
Yes, which was really, really, should not be forgotten that they did that.
So I don't think these are bad people who, you know, who, they just did something stupid. And, you know, tempers flared, but I still think they're, like I said, I think they're fine. I think they're close. And like I said, you know, it's like, you got to discipline your little brother sometimes when he's acting up.
Get that little, I'll put it this way.
I feel a lot better about the Padres' foreseeable future than I feel about the Mets' foreseeable future.
It's true. Very true. Sad, but true. The other like kind of baseball thing that I wanted to address this week is that there was a piece in The Athletic I think that they, I don't know if The Athletic publishes this every year, but the data comes out every year about like the, what they call the fan cost index. So it's basically like the average price to attend a game. And the average price for fans to attend games went up in 2021 to an average of $253 for four people. The Mets, for what it's worth, are really close to that average. They're like maybe slightly above it. I forget, but they're like right in the middle of the pack, and they're like $255 or something like that. But their cost went up 3.2% compared to last season. And the biggest increase, and now keep in mind that this is like, you know, toward the bottom of the scale. So the increase is still, they're still below average, but it's the biggest like percentage increase is actually the Orioles, which is really unfortunate because the team is so bad that like, and it's like way more expensive to see them now. And that's despite ticket prices actually going down. So this is mostly due to consolidating concessions due to COVID-19. And I experienced that myself this year at Camden Yards. Like there's so many fewer concessions than there were. It's even more dramatic than at Citi Field, which we've noted the reduced concessions at Citi Field. At Camden Yards, it's even more dramatic. Like in the upper deck, like there are none of those like little carts that are like, you know, the little pop-up stands that sort of exist around the ballpark that are not like, you know, brick and mortar buildings, but they're just like little stands. None of those are open at Camden Yards right now. None of them. Because A, not enough people are going to see the bad team, and B, it's COVID related. And so the price of concessions has gone up dramatically because there's not as many places to get them. It's a problem. It's a huge barrier to accessibility to the game, especially given the contraction of the minor leagues, which is a more affordable alternative to Major League Baseball. It's $253 for four people is a lot of money for an average person to spend to go to one baseball game. It's a lot of money.
Well, and that's when you say one baseball game. I mean, that's just it. But if you can, if that's what it's going to cost, then maybe you're going to two games a year. And like, That's not gonna like instill lifelong fandom. That's just like a once in a while thing. You know, baseball should be like a lifestyle. But I was thinking about something you had just said, which is that, you know, the Orioles are so bad. They're also cheap. Their payroll is tiny now because they've gotten rid of anybody making any money.
Yep.
And it just goes to show everyone who's like, well, you know, everything is going to get more expensive because the players are demanding more money. And like, no, that's not how it works. They will charge more money no matter what. Pay the good players the money because the price is going to get more expensive anyway. And at least that way you get to see the good players.
Yeah, Francisco Lindor's contract extension is not going to mean that your Bud Light at Citi Field is going to cost more money. That is not what's happening.
Your Bud Light at Citi Field is definitely going to cost more money, no matter what.
Regardless. And it just keeps going up. And teams keep citing like COVID-19 as, you know, a reason why they have to charge more because they have to make up all the lost revenue. But it's like, these are billionaires and people aren't going to go if you make it so unaffordable to attend a game. Like Maggie said, like baseball should be a lifestyle. Like it's different when you're going to like a football game, for example, because like there are so few home football games. There's eight or whatever home football games a season. So like you go to one and it's like a big event and you do it like once a year and you do the big tailgate and it's a big thing. You spend a lot of money on tickets and parking and all this stuff, but you know that you're doing it because it's like a once a year thing for you. For baseball, like baseball's not the same kind of sport. They play it every day. It's a long season. And in order to really like feel like you're a part of it and feel engaged with the team, like I feel bummed out when I go to anything less than like five or six games in a season.
And I will say average is just that, is average. And I, not this year, because my kids are too young to be vaccinated, but like I have on many occasions taken a family of four to a baseball game and paid much less than $250, although still a lot of money. I mean, I could get my fam in and out for probably 1 to 150, but it's still way too much. But like the thing that's really that's stark now is that there's just not that many ways to downgrade. You know, you don't have, like, even if you have bleacher seats, they're still like $25 a ticket if you want to go on weekends. And, you know, if you just want to get, oh, I'm just going to get a hot dog and a soda. Okay, that'll be $12.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's, I get like having the whole $250 experience of like some nice food and some good seats, but there should be the option to go for cheap, to just, you know, bare minimum. And that's not there anymore.
And there used to be like these like family packs where you could like get, you know, you could package your concessions and get like a hot dog and a soda together and get like four of them for, you know, a certain amount that was less than if you bought them individually. But I feel like, I mean, admittedly, as someone who does not take a whole family of people to the ballpark, usually it's just me or just me and my parents or just me and Michael. But like I'm not tapped into this as much, but I haven't noticed those type of deals as much.
No, they're not really around. There's right. Like the closest is the kids meal at Citi Field, which I don't even know what they're doing this year, but is like, it's the low key best food deal on the planet. They don't check to see if you have your kids, but it's like a hot dog, a popcorn and a bottle of juice. And it's like, I think $7.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's about that as much as a good. Single hot dog is otherwise.
That's nice.
But that's the close. But there's no ticket deal. And the team's tickets are always more expensive on weekends. And like, I don't know when else I'm supposed to be taking a 4-year-old, a 7-year-old to a baseball game. It's not going to be at 7 o'clock on a weeknight. Well, but all those tickets are like $30.
Yeah. Like for us that live in the suburbs, I can't go after work. By the time I get down there, it'll be 9 o'clock. So it's like, unless you live in the city or in Queens or close to the ballpark, you know, the rest of us, we're going on weekends. And like you said, families have to go on weekends. So we're always the ones paying extra.
And those of us who travel from outside.
Like we don't have the option of, you know, having the cheaper ticket of going on a weeknight.
And
it's just not feasible.
And not to mention all the travel costs associated with that. Like I have to come from DC. That costs a lot of money in gas and in parking or however we choose to get there.
Even the train, taking the subway, like the Metro North, the Grand Central from where I am is almost $20 at this point.
Yeah. It's just like,
so that's about the same as Citi Field parking, because then you got to take the subway on top of it. So you're not saving any money by taking the train to the game now.
Yeah, it's like people keep wondering like the things MLB can do to, you know, like to grow the fan base, like don't stop it from being so expensive to go to a game. Like that's basic stuff. Like, pace of play doesn't matter if no one wants to go to the game because they can't afford it.
Yeah, like with the Orioles saying, well, we had to raise prices because of COVID. You don't think the rest of us got hit by COVID? You don't think the rest of us are suffering? But the difference is you're a billion-dollar baseball team and we're just, you know, little peons in the grand scheme of things.
We're just regular old people
who
can't afford to miss a paycheck.
Like, no. I'm sure they took a terrible hit. I'm sure the annual increases in their revenue was a little bit smaller this year.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. They're always talking about how like, oh, there's so much, you know, baseball's dying. There's a crunch. But like, if you look at it, they're doing great. They're doing way better than the rest of us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Somehow and they're again, still going to make their money.
And it's not to say that there shouldn't be suites that they shouldn't have, you know, expensive food options, but like make it remotely possible, make it possible for me to walk in and out with my family for under $100.
Yeah.
That seems like a low bar. And unless you're buying, you know, like StubHub tickets, and even then, if you're buying StubHub tickets, and you're bringing most of your own food, you can make it work. But that's kind of ridiculous. Like, yeah. I'm like, let me go onto Mets.com and show up a week later at a baseball game with my family for $100. That's all I'm asking.
Yep. And it's just like peak insulting to your fans to have like to tank and lose on purpose and have a crappy on-field product and then say, ooh, but you got to pay us more for the tickets because, well, not the tickets, but concessions because we didn't make enough money last year. Like, that's bullshit. You're running a like $40 million payroll. Like, come
on. Like, I'm so sorry. We can't, you know, we have to raise the ticket prices because this reliever's salary just ticked up to $7 million a year.
Yep.
Well, and then on top sorry, of that, fans. They have, you know, the stupid purse rule or bag rule. So then you got to rent a locker if you accidentally bought a big purse. So like, it's just frustrating to even just get in the door at a baseball like, game now.
It's almost like an airline these days.
It is. It really is.
They're just like now there's not even food or there's not even hot food. There's just snack boxes and they all cost $17.
Can I get my
snacks?
Can I get my small bottle of airplane whiskey, please? Oh, that'll be $12.
I will pay that $12 every day.
Yep. Anyway, if you want an alternative to watching a Mets game at the ballpark, but you still want to hang out with a bunch of cool people.
You do. And, we know you do.
And absolutely. Raise money for charity for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. We know you do. Come hang out with us this Saturday at Catch in Astoria, Queens. Catch, that's Catch with a K. In Astoria, Queens, 5 p.m. on Saturday. The first 2 hours will be, you know, raffle stuff, hanging out, talking, grabbing drinks. And then before the game starts at 7 p.m., we'll announce the winners. And then you can stick around and watch the game with us if you want, or you can just take your prize and go. Either way, we would love to have you there. The Mets came through for us once again. If you are a Dollars for Dingers veteran, you will know that in 2019, we had signed baseballs from Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard. And I'm convinced that the raffle tickets we sold for those were responsible for like half our total donations alone.
They were like, if you look at just the raffle amount, it was over half.
Yeah.
It was much less than like the pledges. The pledges was the majority, but still a good hearty chunk.
Yes. So the Mets came through for us again. We will have a signed bat from Brandon Nimmo and a signed ball from Michael Conforto at the raffle. On those items only, nothing else, all the other awesome things, which are all awesome, are going to be exclusive to the in-person event. So if you want to bid on any of the other awesome prizes we have available to you, you have to come to the in-person event. However, for this autographed items, because we know that everybody wants a chance to win the autographed items, we will be taking advance bids for those only. Just send us proof of your donation. Now, this is separate from the Dollars for Dingers pledges. This is not the same as the pledges. The pledges are just money that you are giving out of the goodness of your hearts for every Mets home run hit during the month of September from September 3rd to October 3rd, which it's not too late to pledge, by the way. So you should still make a pledge if you haven't already. But this is separate from the pledges. Send us proof of your donation, a screenshot of your confirmation email, your receipt, whatever. You can DM it to us on Twitter, or you can email it to us, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. It's $5 per ticket. So every $5 you donate gets you like one ticket or one bid for the signed bat and the signed baseball. So let's say you send us a screenshot of a donation for $20. That's four tickets you get to bid. So if you want to do that, you can do that as a way to, for those who can't attend the in-person event, send us a proof of your donation in the amount that you would like in increments of five. And we will give you that many bids. But if you attend the event in person, you will be able to bid on those signed items as normal, you know, just buy raffle tickets, and as well as all of our other prizes, which include custom art and t-shirts, a package from our friends at Breaking Tea, poo-poo take hats, Mets hats, gift certificate from Catch, and other really cool stuff. So please, please, please come this Saturday, 5 p.m., Catch Astoria, Queens, and help us make this the most successful Dollars for Dingers campaign yet. We appreciate you guys so much. Thank you to everybody who already pledged. We're up over $6,000 in pledge dollars as of today's podcast. So you can still make a pledge anytime between now and October 3rd when the Dollars for Dingers pledge period ends on the last day of the season.
You are all the Marcus Stroman of podcast listeners.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Tenacious, dedicated,
rock solid,
passionate,
dependable,
good people.
Yeah. So please, please, please keep them coming. Don't stop the pledges now. And please come on Saturday. We would love to see all your wonderful faces. We are so excited for this event. We can't
wait. And it's going to be a beautiful day. So we will almost certainly be able to really enjoy the whole backyard, outside area they have, which is huge. The food is really good there. It's bar food, but like good bar food.
We're going to have a special drink too. Special drink.
Oh, that's love great. It.
And
I am not driving, so
no, me
hook
neither.
Me up with one of them.
No, me either.
And don't forget to bring your vaccine cards or other proof of vaccination, because proof of vaccination is required to attend all bars in New York City. And don't fight them about it, please. Just bring your vaccine card.
Oh my God,
don't
be so embarrassed.
Oh my God.
We don't want to have to kick anyone out of this.
Or get the Excelsior Pass.
Yeah,
that's super easy. Oh, speaking of anti-vaxxers, Jake Arrieta just got DFA'd. Bye.
Bye. Meh. Come hang out with us. We can't wait. We're so, so excited. We will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So this most recent Friday, my little sister got married.
Yay!
And it was really wonderful. It was also like any family wedding, especially one with children involved. There was a lot of drama and a lot of work, but it was a beautiful wedding. And she worked so hard. She planned this wedding twice because it was supposed to be last year. And then she had to plan this year and like, you know, do things like get vaccine, confirmation for plus ones and all kinds of like difficult, you know, she had to cancel her honeymoon and all this stuff. That's, you know, just more stress for a wedding, but the end result was amazing. It was a beautiful wedding. Everyone had so much fun. It was really great. And I'm just so proud of her, and I love her husband. And it was so great to see everybody and just dance a lot. It was a really, really special day. Just a forewarning, no one ever, ever ask my daughter to be a flower girl. That's not her gift. But other than that, it was just beautiful. It was in Dumbo. The bridge was in the background. It was all amazing. So congratulations to Sally and Mario. I love you both. And yay, happy wedding.
Congratulations.
That sounds absolutely lovely. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, crap. I don't have a walk-off win for today. But then... This doesn't sound like a walk-off win, but it is. Sewage backed up at my job, so we had to close early, so I got a surprise half day at work.
That's nice.
So
silver lining.
We didn't have toilets, so we had to close, and I got out at 3 o'clock, and I came home, and I took a nap.
Naps are the best.
Oh, I can't remember the last time I had a good nap. Oh, it was glorious. So That's my walk-off one. It's leaving work early and getting a good nap in.
Taking a nap.
Love it.
Oh, a great so walk-off one.
I woke up and I was like, wait, what time is it? Like, why is it dark already?
That's how you know you had a really good nap. When you wake up and you're like, I don't even know what year it is. Who am I?
You say the clock. You're like, is that AM or PM?
PM. Yeah. Well, with it getting dark so early, it's confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not looking forward to that, honestly.
No.
But as much as I do like the crisp fall weather, I don't enjoy it getting dark earlier.
Nope.
So my walk-off win for this week is that it was Michael's birthday over the weekend, on Friday. And his mom came down for the weekend, and we had a really nice time. We went to our favorite brewery in D.C. They were having their Oktoberfest in September. I always find it funny when they have Oktoberfest events in September, but they did. They had their Oktoberfest event. So I got to drink really tasty German beers and eat really tasty schnitzel, which was awesome. So yeah, we just had a nice time. And you know, it was just a really lovely weekend visiting with family. So that's my walk-off win. You should go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. You should go to our Twitter page and click on the Google Sheet and our pinned tweet to do a Dollars for Dingers pledge if you haven't already, and please come on Saturday. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter, at A Pod of Their Own. And you can email us aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. And if you want to bid on the autographed baseball and or bat, you can DM us on Twitter or email us your donation receipt from the National Domestic Violence Hotline. So yeah, those are the two ways to get in contact with us. You can also follow each of us on Twitter. I am at PetitePhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio on your favorite podcast app of choice. You will get our entire awesome suite of podcasts. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Hope to see you all on Saturday.